Hello, and welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look at stories in health science and technology. I'm Kyle Diaz. A new MU study suggests that quitting smoking may have a positive effect not only on your physical health, but on your mental health as well. But first, the Shelby County Food Pantry distributes about 37,000 pounds of food a month to food insecure families. But the organization's recent efforts have been focused not just on feeding people, but on trying to get healthy food to those families who are least able to afford it. KBIA's Scarlett Robertson has this story.
On a rainy Thursday afternoon, about 30 cars surround the Shelby County Food Pantry in Shelbina, Missouri. Couples, neighbors, women with small children, they're all here for their monthly allotment of food. Some people stay in their cars, others hop out and socialize. Everyone here is food insecure, meaning at some point during the month they're hungry or fear going hungry because they can't afford food. Christina Morgan is one of the food bank clients. The shy 23-year-old just moved to the area with her husband and five kids. This is only the second time she's come to the pantry, but she already knows the drill.
Early in the mornings, you have to come in to the food bank, and then you tell them how many people you have in your family, and then they give you a number. And then you come back later on in the day, usually around 3, and that's when everybody starts getting here, and they call your number off a bullhorn, and then you go in, and they already have your food ready to put in your boxes and to your van. Today, my number is 65. I got up a little late, too, today, though.
65 isn't that bad, considering the number of clients served each month. Pantry Board President Charles Grubb says in July, the pantry served about 650 people.
14!
The Shelby County Food Pantry is one of 9 in the state taking part in the Food Pantry Nutrition Project, a project that aims to help the people who use food pantries make healthier food choices. Right now, that means bringing nutritious food into the pantry, with the immediate goal getting clients to eat better, says Jennifer Schnell, a research associate with the project. The thing is, if you don't know how to prepare these healthy foods, they can go to waste.
Last summer / fall when I was out interviewing people, everybody said, if I just had recipes, I just don't know what to do with it. I even heard someone say, we got sweet potatoes last year and I didn't know what to do with them.
So Schnell's come up with recipes based on each month's food offerings, recipes that are nutritional but don't require a lot of prep or cooking know-how. Schnell says ultimately they'd like to reduce obesity in this population. Some studies have associated food insecurity with obesity, and along with obesity is a whole host of health-related problems, including diabetes, heart disease, even certain kinds of cancers. It might take more than a recipe card to reverse a lifetime of unhealthy eating habits, though. I meet Christina Morgan later that week at the trailer park where she lives. She greets me at the door, her light brown hair is pulled into a loose bun. Inside, it's dark. The windows are covered with blankets and an air conditioner blasts. Tonight, dinner's for 7 kids, hers plus 2 relatives, and they're hungry. Here, in her tiny yellow kitchen, cabinets are packed with food from the recent trip to the pantry. Hamburger buns, diet soda, peanut butter, canned food. At the food bank, Morgan heard about the healthy recipes, but once she got home, they were all but forgotten.
I wasn't really interested in the recipes that they had on there. They just nothing that really the kids would eat. Well, we did get packages of noodles. I had some tuna fish. We got a bag of chips, so I'm going to use those too. I have some Velveeta packets, so I'm going to make homemade tuna fish casserole.
Morgan begins preparing the meal while the kids run back and forth from the kitchen to the living room. She divides her time between checking on the casserole and refereeing squabbles.
You guys, you know better than to be back there? Get up here.
Then the meal is finally served. For Morgan, if a dinner contains servings for most food groups, it's good enough. But I wonder how healthy it actually is.
I believe it's healthy. As long as you use healthy things and mix it together, it's still going to be healthy food. Like I said, about the only thing that's not healthy in this would be the potato chips, and there's not enough in that to be any harm to anybody, just enough to give it a little flavor.
Okay, there's tuna in it, but what about the processed cheese, the noodles, and most of all, the potato chips? Vera Massey's an expert on nutrition, and she's worked with Mid-Missourians who have limited access to fresh, healthy food.
I think there's that ideal situation where we're consuming this wide variety of foods and certain amounts that we know we're going to get our maximum nutritional value. And I would venture to say very few people are achieving that.
Meeting that maximum nutrition goal is hard, and not just for people on low incomes.
I think it's quite possible that regardless of your socioeconomic level, you could not be eating healthy foods. Cost is not always the factor that determines why we choose the foods that we do.
So where does that leave Morgan's tuna casserole?
The tuna is a fairly good source of protein. The peas, while they're canned, they're not powerhouses of nutrients. Could there have been some other choices from those food groups that might have been a bit healthier? I could come up with some. But when you look at what she put together, that took little time. She knew, you know, how to do that.
Remember, Morgan's not just cooking for herself. She has her kids' tastes in mind, too.
This is delicious.
At least for tonight. Scarlett Robertson, KBIA News.
I'm Kyle Diaz, and you're listening to Under the Microscope. Andrew Littlefield is a doctoral student at the University of Missouri, whose work focuses on the relationship between substance abuse and personality. He was recently charged with analyzing a mountain of data going back almost 25 years.
The first wave of data was collected in 1987 from MU freshmen. They were assessed at seven different time points across from 18 to 35, so they were assessed all years of college, and then again when they were 25, and then again when they were 29, and then again when they were about 35.
What Littlefield found was that individuals who quit smoking showed a significant decline in negative personality traits like impulsivity and neuroticism.
What our research really focuses on is on the developmental aspect. How do changes in personality across time relate to changes in substance use? And what we find is that those who quit smoking between 18 and 25 tend to also show the largest reductions in impulsivity, which impulsivity is just thinking, acting without thinking, and also neuroticism, which is just the tendency to experience negative mood states.
What remains to be seen, though, is whether this link is causal. Did quitting smoking improve the mental health of study participants? Or did they quit smoking because they became happier people? The answer to that question, says Littlefield, requires more research. That's Under the Microscope. I'm Kyle Diaz. Thanks for listening. You can find these stories and many more at kbia.org.